Osho, Gyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 2, The Book of the Secrets, A New Commentary, Discourse Number 10, given in Bombay, India.
The first question. Last night you said that by changing the outer, the inner remains unchanged, untransformed. But is not it true that the right foot, right labor, right sleep, right action and behavior are also important factors for inner transformation? Isn't it a mistake to ignore the outer completely? The outer cannot change the inner, but the outer can help, or it can hinder. The outer can create a situation in which the inner can explode more easily. The thing to be remembered is this, that the outer transformation is not the inner. Even if you have done everything and the situation is there, the inner is not going to explode. The situation is necessary. It is helpful. But it is not the transformation. And those who get involved with the outer, and the outer is a vast phenomenon. You can go on changing for life, and you will never be satisfied. And something or other will remain to be changed. Because unless the inner changes, the outer can never be perfect. So you can go on changing it and polishing it and conditioning it. You will never feel satisfied. You will never come to a situation where you can feel, now the field is ready. So many have wasted their life. If your mind becomes obsessed with the outer, with the food, with the clothes, with the behavior, I'm not saying that neglect them, no. What I am saying is, don't get obsessed with them. They can be helpful, but they can become great hindrances. If your mind becomes obsessed, then it becomes an escape. Then you are just postponing the inner change. And you can go on changing the outer. The inner is not even touched by it. The inner remains the same. You might have heard one old Indian fable. In Panchatantra, it is said that a mouse was very much afraid of a cat, constantly in fear, anxiety. He couldn't sleep. The dreams were about the cat, and he was trembling. A magician, just out of pity, transformed the mouse into a cat. The outer was changed. But immediately, the mouse within the cat now became afraid of a dog. The anxiety is the same, only the object has changed. Previously it was the cat, now it is the dog. The trembling continued, the anguish remained, the dreams were still of fear. So the magician changed the cat into a dog. immediately the dog became afraid of the tiger, because the mouse within remains the same. The mouse is not changed, only bodies, the outer, the same anxiety, the same disease, the same fear. So the magician changed the dog into a tiger. Immediately the mouse within the tiger became afraid of a hunter. So the magician said to the mouse, "Now be the mouse again, because I can change your body, I cannot change you. You have a heart of a mouse, so what can I do? The heart of a mouse. You can go on changing the outer, but the heart of the mouse remains the same. And that heart creates the problem. The shape will change, the form will change, but the substance will remain the same. And it makes no difference whether you are afraid of a cat, or of a dog, or of a tiger. The question is not of whom you are afraid. The question is that you are afraid. The emphasis is, my emphasis is, that you must remain aware that your outer effort should not become a substitute for the inner transformation. One thing. Take every help that can be taken. It is good to have right foot, but it is nonsense and madness to become obsessed with foot. It is good to have right behavior, but it is neurotic to become obsessed with it. You should not become mad about anything. In India, there are many sects of sannyasis which are obsessed with foot. The whole day, they are thinking only of food, what to eat and what not to eat. Who should prepare the food? Who should not prepare the food? Once I was traveling with a sannyasi. He will take only milk, and milk only of cows, and only those cows which are white. Otherwise, he will go without food. This man is mad. So remember this, that the inner is important, significant. The outer, if helpful, it is good. But you must not become focused with it. It must not be that the inner is forgotten. The inner must remain the inner and the central, and the outer, if possible, should be changed just as a help. Don't ignore it completely. There is no need to ignore it. Because really, the outer is also part of the inner. It is not something opposite to it. It is not something contrary to it. It is not something imposed upon you. It is you. But the inner is the central and the outer is the periphery. So give importance as much as a periphery needs, a circumference needs, a boundary needs. But the boundary is not the house. So take care of it. But don't become mad after it. Our mind is always trying to find escape. If you can become involved with food, with sex, with clothes, with the body, your mind will be at ease. Because now, you are not going towards the inner. Now there is no need to change the mind. Now there is no need to destroy the mind, to go beyond the mind. With the change of food, the same mind, you may eat this or that, the same mind can exist. Only when you move inward, the more inner your reach, the more this mind which you have has to see. The inward path is the path towards no mind. The mind becomes afraid. It will try to find out some escape, something to do with the outer, then the mind can exist as it is. Whatsoever you do, it makes no sense. It is irrelevant what you do. This mind can exist. And this mind can find out ways how to remain the same. And sometimes, when you struggle with the natural outlet, your mind will find some perverted outlets, which are more dangerous. Rather than to be a help, they will become hindrances. I have heard that Mulla Nasruddin fell down from his stairs. He got fractured. So his leg was put in a plaster case. And he was said that for 3 months he is not to go up and down the stairs. After 3 months he came to the doctor. The plaster was removed. And Mullah asked, can now I go up and down the stairs? I said, now you can go, you are absolutely okay. So he said, now I am so happy, doctor. You cannot believe me. It was so awkward to come up and down the whole day by the drain pipe. 3 months continuously, the whole day, coming up and down by the drain pipe. It was so awkward. And the whole neighborhood was laughing at me. But because you have told me not to go up and down the stairs, so I had to find out a way. This is how we, everyone is doing. If one outlet is blocked, then a perversion is bound to happen. And you don't know the ways of the mind. They are very cunning and very subtle. People come to me with their problems. The problem seems to be obvious. It is not. All problems seem to be obvious. Just clear. It is not so. Deep down, something else is hidden. And unless that something else is known, discarded, gone beyond, the problem will remain. It will change its shape. Someone is smoking too much. He wants to stop it. But smoking in itself is not a problem. The problem is else. You can stop smoking, but the problem will remain. and it will have something else to come out. When you smoke, when you are anxious, nervous, you start smoking. And smoking helps you. You feel more confident. You feel more relaxed. Just by stopping the smoking, your nervousness is not going to change. You will feel nervous. You will feel anxious. The anxiety will come. Then you will do something else. And you can find something which is a beautiful substitute. It looks so different. You can do anything. You can just use a mantra instead of smoking. And whenever you feel nervous, you can say, Ram, Ram, Ram. Anything, continuously. What you are doing with the smoke, it is a mantra. You smoke in and out. You smoke in and out. It becomes a repetitive thing. Because of the repetition, you feel relaxed. Repeat anything and the same will happen. But if you are using a mantra and saying Ram, 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 no one is going to say that you are doing something wrong. And the same is the problem. The problem has not changed. Only you have changed the trick. Previously you were doing with a smoke, now you are doing with a word. Repetition helps. Any novel, you have just to repeat it continuously. When you repeat a thing, it gives relaxation. Because it creates a sort of boredom. Boredom is relaxing. You can do anything that creates. If you are smoking, everyone will say this is wrong. And if you are chanting a mantra, no one is going to say that this is wrong. But if the problem is the same, I am saying that it is also wrong. Rather, more dangerous than the previous one. Because about smoking, you were aware that this is wrong. Now this chanting of the mantra, you are not aware. And the disease, you are unaware, is more dangerous and more harmful. You can do anything on the surface, but unless deeper roots are changed, nothing happens. So with the outer, remember this, be aware of it. And move from the surface towards the roots. And find out the roots. Why you are nervous? Someone is eating too much food. It can be stopped. You can force yourself not to eat too much. But why one is eating too much food? Why? Because this is not the bodily need. So somewhere mind is interfering. Something is to be done with the mind. It is not a question of body. Why you go on stuffing yourself? Too much obsession with food is a love need. If you are not loved well, you will eat more. If you are loved and you can love, you will eat less. Whenever someone loves you, you cannot eat more. Love fills you so much. You don't feel empty. When there is not love, you feel empty. Something has to be stuffed in. You go on forcing food. And there are reasons, root reasons about it. Because the first encounter of the child with love and food is simultaneous. from the same breast, from the same mother, he will get food and love. Food and love become associated. If the mother is loving, the child will never take too much milk. There is no need. He is always secure in his love. He knows whenever there will be need, the food will be coming. The milk will be there. The mother will be there. He feels secured. But if the mother is non-loving, then he is insecure. Then he doesn't know whether when he feels hungry, food will be coming, because there is no love. He will eat more. This will continue. It will become an unconscious route. So you can go on changing your food. Eat this, eat that, don't eat this. It makes no difference, because the basic route remains there. Then, if you stop stuffing yourself with food, you will start stuffing with something else. And there are many ways. If you stop eating too much, you may start accumulating money. Then again, you have to be filled by something. Then you go on accumulating money. Observe deeply, and the person who accumulates money is never in love. Cannot be, because the money accumulation is really a substitute. With money he will feel secure now. When you are loved, there is no insecurity. In love, all fears disappear. In love, there is no future, no past. This moment is enough. This very moment is eternity. You are accepted. There is no anxiety for the future. What will happen tomorrow? There is no tomorrow in love. But if love is not there, then the tomorrow is there. What will happen? Accumulate money, because you cannot rely on any person. Rely on things. Rely on money and wealth. There are people who will say, donate your money. Don't accumulate money. Be non-attached to money. But these are superficial things. Because the inner need will remain the same, then he will start accumulating something else. Stop one outlet and you will have to create another, unless the roots are destroyed. So don't be too much concerned with the outer. Be aware of whatsoever your outer personality is, be aware of it, be alert. And from the periphery, always move towards the root to find what is the cause there. Howsoever disturbing, move to the roots. Once you come to know the roots, once the roots are exposed, remember this law. The roots can exist only in darkness. Not only the roots of trees, roots of anything, they can exist only in darkness. Once they are brought to light, they die. So move with your periphery, dig it deep and go to the roots and bring the roots to consciousness, to light. Once you have come to the root, it simply disappears. You are not to do anything about it. You have to do something only because you don't know what is the problem. A problem rightly understood disappear. Right understanding of a problem, a root understanding of the problem, becomes the disappearance of it. One thing, and second thing, whatsoever you do, is superficial. It is not you in your totality. So don't judge a man by his action, because action is very atomic. You see a person in anger, and you can judge that this man is with hatred, violence, vengeance. But a moment later, the anger disappears, and this man becomes as loving as possible. And a different perfume, a different flowering comes to his face. The anger was atomic. Don't judge the whole man. But this love is also atomic. Don't judge the whole man by this love. Whatsoever you have done is not your total sum. Your actions remain just atomic. Part of you, of course, but your totality transcends them. You can be different immediately. And whatsoever is known about you by your behavior, by your actions, by your doing, you can contradict it. You may have been a saint. You can become a sinner this very moment. No one could have imagined that you, a saint, could have done this. You can do it. It is not inconceivable. You may have been a sinner up to this moment, and the next moment you can jump out of it. What I am saying is, your inner is so vast and so great that by your outer it cannot be judged. Your outer remains superficial, accidental. I will repeat it, your outer remains, your inner is the essence. So remember to uncover the inner and don't get entangled with the outer. One thing more, outer is always of the past. It is always dead. Because whatsoever you have done, you have done. It is always of the past. It is never alive. The inner is always alive, it is here and now, and the outer is always dead. If you know me, whatsoever I have done and said, you know me, my past. You don't know me. I am here, the living. That is my inner point. And whatsoever you know about me is just outer. It is dead. It is no more there. Observe it in your own consciousness. Whatsoever you have done is not a bondage on you. It is no more really. It is just a memory. And you are greater than that. And your infinite possibilities are there. It was only accidental that you were a sinner, or you were a saint. It was accidental only that you are a Christian or a Hindu. But your innermost being is not accidental. It is essential. The emphasis on the inner is the emphasis on the essential. And that inner remains free. It is freedom. And the outer is slavery. Because you can know the outer only when it has happened. Then you cannot do anything about it. What can you do about your past? It cannot be undone. You cannot move backwards. You cannot do anything with the past. It is a slavery. If you understand it rightly, then you can understand the theory of karma, the theory of action. This theory, one of the most essential part of Hindu realization, that unless you go beyond karmas, you are not free. Unless you have gone beyond all actions, you will remain in bondage. Don't pay much attention to the outer. Don't get obsessed with it. Use it as a help. But continuously remembering that the inner has to be discovered. These techniques we are discussing here are for the inner, how to discover it. I will tell you one thing. There have been traditions. For example, one of the most important religious traditions has been Jainism. Jainism paid too much attention to the outer. Too much, so much so, that they completely forgot that there is anything like meditation. There is anything like a science of yoga. They forgot it completely. They are obsessed with food, with clothes, with sleep, everything. But no effort towards meditation. Not that in their tradition, originally there were no meditation, because no religion can be born. But they got obsessed somewhere with the outer. It became so important, they forgot completely. That this whole situation is just a help. It is not the goal. What you eat is not the goal. What you are is the goal. It is good if your eating habits help you to uncover the being. It is good. But if you become just obsessed with eating, continuously thinking about it, then you have missed the point. Then you are a food addict. You are mad, neurotic. Second question, isn't it true that all meditation techniques are really doings which lead the seeker to his being? In a way, yes. And in a more deeper way, no. Meditation techniques are doings because you are advised to do something. Even to meditate is to do something. Even to sit silently is to do something. Even not to do anything is a part of doing. So in a superficial way, all meditation techniques are doing. But in a deeper way, they are not. Because if you succeed in them, the doing disappears. Only in the beginning it appears like an effort. If you succeed in it, the effort disappears. And the whole thing becomes spontaneous and effortless. If you succeed in it, it is not a doing. No effort on your part is needed then. It becomes just like breathing. It is there. But in the beginning, the effort is bound to be. Because the mind cannot do anything which is not an effort. If you test, the whole thing seems absurd. In Zen, where too much emphasis is paid on effortlessness, the masters say to the disciples, just sit, don't do anything. And the disciples try. Of course, what you can do except then try. The disciple tries just to sit. And he tries not to do anything. And then the master's staff comes on his head and he said, don't do this. I have not told you to try to sit, because that becomes an effort. And don't try not to do anything, because that is a part of doing. Simply sit. If I tell you to simply, what you will do? You will do something which will make it not a simple sitting. A effort will enter. You will be sitting with an effort. A strain will be there. You cannot simply sit. Looks strange. But the moment you try to sit simply, it has become complex. The very effort to sit simply makes it complex. So what to do? Years pass, and the disciple goes on sitting and being blamed, condemned by the master, that you are missing my point. But patiently he goes on, goes on, goes on. And every day he is a failure, because the effort is there, and he cannot deceive the master. But one day, just patiently sitting, even this consciousness to sit simply disappears. One day suddenly he is sitting, like a tree, or like a rock, not doing anything. And then the master says, this is the right posture. Now you have attended. Now remember this. This is the way how to sit. But it takes patience and long effort to achieve effortlessness. In the beginning, effort will be there, doing will be there, but only in the beginning, as a necessary evil. But you have to remember constantly that you have to go beyond it. A moment must come when you are not doing anything about meditation. Just being there, and it happens. Just sitting or standing, and it happens. Not doing anything, just being aware, it happens. All these techniques are just to help you to come to an effortless moment. The inner transformation, the inner realization cannot happen through effort. Because effort is a sort of tension. With effort you cannot get relaxed totally. The effort will become a barrier. With this background in the mind, if you make effort, by and by, you will become capable of leaving it all. It is just like swimming. If you know swimming, then in the beginning you have to make effort. But only in the beginning. Once you know the feel of it, once you know what it is, the effort has gone. You can swim effortlessly. And even a good swimmer cannot say what is swimming, what he is doing exactly. He cannot explain you what he is doing. Really, he is not doing anything. He is simply allowing himself to be in a deep response relationship with water, with the river. He is not doing anything really. And if he is still doing, he is still not an expert swimmer. He is still amateur. He is still learning. I will tell you one anecdote. In Burma, one Buddhist monk was ordered to make a design for a new temple, particularly for the gate. So he was making many designs. He had one, a very genius disciple. So he told that disciple to be near him. While he makes the design, the disciple is simply to watch. And if he likes, he has to say that, okay, this is right. If he doesn't like, then he has to say no. And the master said, when you say yes, then only I will send the design. If you say, go on saying no, I will discard the designs and will create a new one. 100 designs were discarded by this way. 3 months passed. Even the master became afraid. But he had given the word. So he had to keep it. And the disciple was there, and he will make the design. And then the disciple will say, no. He will start another.